Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, we are going to be focusing on the energy sector, more specifically oil, even dive in a little bit to some of the recent gas prices, as well as get some insights on a couple of the stocks that our guest, Dan Steffens, president of Energy Perspectives Group, what he's writing about and what he's following. Now, Dan, I featured you on the show. This is probably about a month ago where we introduced your letter and the Energy Perspectives Group, as well as your overall outlook for the energy sector. I'll post a link to that interview below for everyone that wants a bit more insights on the Energy Perspectives Group. But let's get right into the oil sector. And I first want to start off with the whole supply and demand narrative. We keep on hearing that the oil market is tight, but there's still a lot of bears that are saying that's not going to last. The oil price will broadly correct. Dan, what are you seeing when it comes to supply and demand within the oil sector?
Well, I think eventually, you know, if oil stays up near $100 a barrel, yeah, it's going to result in more, you know, rigs being put to work, but it's going to be a slow on the supply side. But the thing that's really pushed the oil price so high is demand has just snapped back. And we were already back to where demand was at the, you know, at the end of 2019, pre-pandemic. And between now and the end of April, May or so, you're going to get another 2 million barrel a day increase in demand for crude oil because it's just seasonal, you know, the summer driving season. And also in the U.S., you have to use more crude oil to make summer blend gasoline. You can't mix in NGLs anymore in the summer blend gasoline. So there's an automatic million and a half barrel increase in demand for oil every year that comes mid second quarter. And all of our petroleum inventories are way too low, not just in the U.S., but OECD inventories are down below 27 days of consumption, where 30 days of consumption is considered normal. And the last time we spent any extended period in this low of an inventory level, we had triple digit oil prices for like 4 years in a row. And so I think it's going to take quite a bit of activity to get caught up. And then if you assume we're really out of the pandemic and we get a snapback in travel, that can add another million and a half, 2 million barrels a day of production or of demand. So it's tight right now.
Well, Dan, we also hear that, you know, there's an OPEC capacity issue that certain countries can't even produce where their capacity limits are. But then we hear on the other side of that things like, well, if Iran brings on more oil or some of these other countries that have been not producing as much, that it could flood the market. How much of that do you read into the oil price? And how much of this do you think is actually driven by the demand side you were just laying out, the expectations that we are going to have that summer driving season, that we are going to have that seasonal bounce? Do you think the country news could swamp the typical seasonal fundamentals?
Yeah, it's becoming pretty clear that, you know, the OPEC plus group can't meet their quotas. Probably all but a few of the countries, you know, Saudi Arabia, UAE, you know, and then Iran, just because they've been under the sanctions, probably have some spare capacity to bring back. But the other countries cannot meet their quotas. In fact, that as a group, OPEC plus has been below their quota for like four straight months. And I think it's like 800,000 barrels or a million barrels a day below quota. They keep, you know, raising their official quotas by 400,000 barrels a day each month, but they're not coming close to meeting those. And now with this, you know, Russia invading Ukraine thing, who knows what's going to happen to that? I mean, Russia is one of the top three oil supply countries in the world. So if anything happens, any of those sanctions curtail their ability to export is going to be a really big deal. Now on with Iran, I personally think Iran has been smuggling out a lot of their oil. China's been buying it all at a big discount. It's believed they have a lot of oil in storage. So they'll have a little kind of a surge at the beginning of it. If, let's say, sanctions are lifted tomorrow, it would still probably be several months before you'd see supply impact from that. You know, just the logistics of moving it and everything. But I think we're going to need every drop. I think we're, and the thing is, with OECD inventories, 300 or 400 million barrels below where they should be, it's going to take a lot of overproduction just to get our inventories back to normal. So It's look like we're in an extended period of time where I think oil flops around, and if 85 is the right price, the fair price, with all this geopolitical risk, we're probably looking at $95 to $100 a barrel.
Dan, how closely do you pay attention to some of the other, let's call them larger financial institutions, and some of their price forecasts? Because recently Raymond James raised their oil price forecast to right around $100 a barrel this year. And they even said that oil could spike to around $110 a barrel in the later part of this year. Do you put much weight on some of these larger financial institutions and their outlooks?
Yeah, I'm pretty close to the Raymond James team. In fact, I got one of their top guys going to get on a webinar with me here in March. But I and Marshall Atkins, he runs their energy investment banking division. And he said in front of a whole bunch of people here in Houston on November 29th, I remember, his prediction was that oil would go to 110. A lot of those firms, they like to be very conservative in their oil price forecast because that's what they're using to value these companies. So they would rather, be a little too low. But yeah, Goldman Sachs is saying 90 to 100. Morgan Stanley, which was very conservative, said they see triple digit oil prices now. And it's just everybody, it's pretty clear that the above ground inventories keep falling. They've been falling by 1.5 to 2 million barrels per day every month for the last like 18 months. We have not had inventory builds for a year and a half. And so we got to get that, sooner or later you run out of inventory, and this world runs on oil still. And there's nothing we can do about that. So you just, when you get close to running out of inventory, it's a big deal for the Western countries, especially.
Well, Dan, when you get into some of the other products that are created out of the oil market, how much of this pricing pressure that we see in the markets is also just due to refining capacity? I know that that's changed a lot on the world stage, and the U.S. doesn't have quite as much as it used to, or some of the products that are moving through it don't match the refining capacity. How does that refining capacity play into the pricing?
Well, really, we have enough refining capacity. The problem is, like you said, the quality of oil. A lot of people think all oil is the same. A lot of our refinery network here in the United States is made for heavier oils, either coming down from Canada, heavy oil from the oil sands plays, and then also from Venezuela. They were built to handle those heavier crudes. And you can only make diesel out of the heavier crudes. This light oil, this ultra light oil that comes out of the shale plays, you can make gasoline out of it, but you can't make diesel and home heating oil out of it. So that's a problem. And right now, the last time I looked, our diesel inventories were 19% below the five-year average. That is critical. And there is no way we can solve this supply chain issue without a big, steady supply of diesel.
So Dan, if we drive down into some of the stocks, then what do you like out there? Where do you see some of the best opportunities for money to either rotate into, new money to come in? Where are you focusing some of your recent investing?
Yeah, I'm looking at these companies that are generating free cash flow. They have solid balance sheets. All of our companies in our three model portfolios now are generating lots of free cash flow. I was a little bit worried about the natural gas companies, but that situation has changed drastically, mainly because of the situation in Europe being so low on natural gas that our LNG shipments, liquefied natural gas, demand for it has been super high. So our LNG export capacity, they've been running at near capacity or even above capacity some weeks. And we got even two more LNG facilities coming online here pretty soon. So we're exporting by LNG and by pipe about 20 BCF a day and billion cubic feet a day. And that's a big deal because it's more than like 22-23% of our total market. And as long as that stays strong, it's going to support gas prices. And with this kind of much colder weather we had finally in January and now going into February, I saw a long range weather forecast the other day. It said winter weather is going to stay around until at least mid-March. And we're going to end the winter heating season with natural gas and U.S. storage about 300 billion cubic feet below normal. And you have to refill the storage before the next year. So that adds another layer of demand. So I think natural gas got a good chance to stay over $4, maybe $4.50. The strip right now, for the next 12 months, the strip prices are all above $4.50. And if they stay there, boy, some of these companies like Antero Resources, I'll mention that one. I just looked at it the other day. Its symbol is AR. It's got a lot more unhedged gas this year. It's looking really good. I like some of these guys that the larger companies, I like the ones that are paying a really good dividend. Devon Energy pays a good dividend. Pioneer pays a variable dividend. It's going to be going up according to my forecast. Ovintiv, which used to be in Canada, up there in your neck of the woods, but they moved their office at Denver and changed the name. Ovintiv, that's OVV, is going to pay a nice dividend. Keep an eye on, there's a company that just changed its name to Coterra, C-O-T-E-R-R-A, Coterra Energy. And it's the merger of Cimarex and Cabot. And then they changed the name of the company, but it's a large cap that's, I think, going to pay a really nice dividend. And of course, if you're bullish on oil, and I'm bullish on oil, Continental Resources, none of their production is hedged. So they're going to be, you know, cashing some big revenue checks here in the first part of this year. That's for sure.
Well, Dan, you brought up natural gas there and how the United States is exporting it now to Europe. That's kind of topical with all these geopolitical tensions that we're seeing with Russia and Europe, because they're such a key supplier of natural gas as well. Do you think that this could change the global dynamics as far as, would there be, because there's a lot of rumbling about, hey, the U.S. could actually start being a bigger exporter to Europe and fill the gap that if Russia gets off the scene. Do you think that that could change the demand for some of these U.S. nat gas companies and maybe give them a boost?
Well, the thing is about Europe, they're kind of limited on how much they can import because they have to have the regasification facilities. And I don't think they have that much. They can import about 6.5 to 7 billion cubic feet a day. And most of that's, or almost all of it's coming from the United States now. And so they're a big trading partner with us. And yeah, it definitely changes that dynamic, because we were kind of a closed market. In fact, you go back 5 or 6 years ago, we had no export capacity other than, you know, some small pipelines to Eastern Canada and a little bit going down to Mexico. We did not have LNG export capacity. Well, now it's growing year after year after year. Our total export capacity for LNG, that's liquefied natural gas, they freeze it, they put it on ships and all, and that's like 13 billion cubic feet a day. And it's going, within the next year or so, going to 15 billion cubic feet a day. So it's a big part of our demand. So more and more, the global natural gas price is starting to pull up the North American gas price. So it's helping us and it's helping the Canadian gas producers. In fact, Canada is going to build an export facility on the West Coast, I think.
What's your outlook for some of the Canadian plays then in terms of, well, how they get it around and also some of the different geopolitical issues that could play into, again, Canada's distribution of oil?
Yeah, I mean, there's another pipe coming on. I can't remember the name of it pretty soon, where they're going to have enough export capacity and, you know, their production hasn't gone up that much. So it's, you know, if they have to truck it, they truck it. But I particularly like two Canadian small caps. I think you've had them on your show. I like InPlay Oil and I like Hemisphere Oil. And they're both, Hemisphere is almost a pure oil play. It's like 99% of its production is crude oil. And InPlay, I think, is about 70% of their production is crude oil. But they're both looking good and they're very cash flow positive, free cash flow positive. They have more than enough operating cash flow to fund their growth. And I just really like those two companies. So Hemisphere is HME and InPlay is IPO.
Well, Dan, we were talking off mic and you mentioned that you like a lot of those Canadian small caps, like you just mentioned. How much does jurisdiction play into your investing thesis? Do you spend a lot of time just focused on North American stocks, or do you look at other areas? Do you look at South America? Do you look at Africa? What's your outlook on jurisdiction?
Well, I pretty much stick with the ones that are onshore U.S. Just because that's what our members want. You know, my membership is a lot of people that invest heavily in the U.S. energy sector, and probably 60 or 70% of them are geologists or engineers that used to work in it, and so they're just looking to me to come up with you know, good forecast and valuation models for these things. We do have one offshore company, Talos Energy. They're Gulf of Mexico. It's trading at less than half of my valuation, TALO. It was up 19% last year, but it was the worst performing stock we had in any of our portfolios. So I think the next closest one was up 56% to these guys. So, then I kind of like, there's some oil field service companies that I like, little ones that are niche players. Solaris Oil Field Infrastructure, they got a really strong balance sheet. They manage frac sand at the well site. You know, as the drilling activity and completing of these horizontal wells picks up, they're gonna gain market share. And in fact, they put a lot more of their crews to work just in the fourth quarter, and they had a very positive, fourth quarter, and the guidance for this year was very positive. So that one looks good. It pays a nice little dividend, about 5% yield, and I think the stock price could go up 50 or 60%. Its symbol is SOI.
Well, Dan, just one more question before we wrap up, and you brought up a dividend there. I know in this kind of uncertain time, some people are looking for defensive ways to play the markets, and energy stocks have some really great dividend paying stocks. I know you cover that sector in one of your publications. Is there any other defensive dividend paying stocks that you feel like mentioning that would be a good place for investors to ride out the storm?
Yeah, we're going to increase our supply. We're going to put 200 or 300 more rigs to work between now and the end of the year, and that production's got to go someplace. So I like these midstream companies, and I think some of them are excellent dividend payers. I also like the minerals companies. Now they actually own the minerals. They're not working interest owners, so they have very low expenses, and we have four of them in our high yield income portfolio. One I just looked at yesterday. Now it's an MLP. I know some people don't like MLPs, which is Blackstone Minerals, BSM, and it pays about a 9% dividend yield, and which should be going up. The other three all C Corp. So Brigham Minerals, which is MNRL, has about a 10% yield, and none of its production's hedged, so they should be increasing it. Their distributions, and their distributions are variable, so they pretty much go up and down with commodity prices. So if you believe oil and gas prices are going to stay high like I do, then these look really good. A really safe play are a couple of them here. Let's see, there's C Corps. I like One Oak, OKE, out of Tulsa. It's like a 100-year-old company, really, really solid financials, about a 6-7% dividend yield. I think Plains All American, it trades as an MLP PAA, and then as a C Corp PAGP. PAGP is actually the parent company. The only thing that it owns is units in the MLP, but it's taxed as a C Corp. And they both pay identical dividends of 72 cents a year, which could double, I think, by the end of this year. And so they're in the 6-7% yield range.
All right, Dan, very good insights. Very interesting to hear your outlook for the energy sector. And thanks for sharing a number of stocks, both large and smaller, that you see as having some good opportunities. We'll try to dive into some more of these stocks and future calls, and we'll even bring a couple of the companies on the show based on your recommendations to get a little bit more information from the company representatives.
Yeah, we're in the process of updating the individual company profiles right now, and we do that every quarter. So now is a good time to get our reports, and in each one of those I give what I believe is a fair valuation for the stock.
Okay, well, we will also post to the Energy Prospectus Group a link below this interview. Dan, thank you as always for chatting with us, buddy. We'll bring you back on the show in the next few weeks. Hope you have a great rest of your week.
All right. Thank you.